said I'd be there by 7:20. I arrived on time and was taken to the green room. "You're the first one here," the makeup woman said to me. "The first guest is running a couple of minutes late."
"First guest?"
"Yes, someone named Red Auerbach."
Great.
Not only was I not in the second block, as I had been told, but the absolute last person I wanted to share a green room with was Red Auerbach. It wasn't because I had grown up in New York, living and dying with the Willis Reed, Walt Frazier, Dave DeBuscher, Bill Bradley Knicks, and, as a result, hated the Boston Celtics. It wasn't even my filmy little kid memories of him lighting up that damn victory cigar. It was something he had said a few years earlier to my friend Dan Shaughnessy when Shaughnessy was writing a book on him, one of dozens done by, with, and about Red through the years. When Shaughnessy approached Red about doing the book, Red had said to him, "Okay, I'll do it, but just don't do to me what that asshole did to Bobby Knight." That asshole would be me. Shaughnessy, after gleefully reporting the line to me, used it in the book. Since I had only met Auerbach once, when he spoke at the basketball banquet my junior year in college, and I had to glumly admit to people that he was fabulous, I figured I was safe in assuming his line to Shaughnessy summed up his feelings about me pretty accurately. I was sitting on a couch pretending to read something, trying to think of what to say when Red walked into the room. I rarely get nervous meeting people. I'm too old and have met too many people for that. Now I was nervous. I stood up, offered my hand, and said, "Hi, Coach. John Feinstein." Would he refuse to shake hands? Would he call me an asshole? Red is legendary for many things, one of them being his bluntness. "Hey, John, how are you doing?" he said, shaking hands, with surprising firmness for someone who was 81 at the time and smiling. "You on the show, too?" I explained that I was. He then began apologizing for being late. I felt myself relaxing. Maybe, I thought, the guy is 81 and he's forgotten who I am. Red went in to get made up. The producer, refusing to make eye contact with me, came in to tell him they'd be ready for him in 10 minutes. Yeah, fine, whatever, Red said. Red came back into the green room, sat down, lit a cigar, of course, and gave me another smile. "So," he said, taking the cigar out of his mouth, "you talked to your buddy any time recently?" "My buddy?" The grin was now what I would later understand to be wicked when he's about to nail someone. "Yeah, your buddy Bobby Knight." Oh, Christ, he hadn't forgotten. Now I was nervous and stumbling again. "Coach, we don't exactly speak too often," I said. Now he was laughing. "Yeah, no kidding. Don't worry about it. He hates a lot of people." "He loves you, though." I had spent a good deal of time with Knight listening to him talk about Auerbach's genius and his generosity. He puffed on the cigar. "That's just because I never wrote anything about him." Now I was laughing, too. We spent the next few minutes talking about the upcoming tournament, how overrated he thought number one ranked Duke was. He was proven correct by Connecticut in the championship game, and what I had been working on recently. By the time they came to take him to the set, I was hoping the show might be delayed for another hour. He smoked the cigar the whole time he was on the air. Naturally, no one dared to tell him there was no smoking in the building. When it was my turn to go in, Red paused on his way out. "It was good to see you," he said. "Keep up the good work." The wicked grin returned. "I'll tell your buddy you said hello." Knowing Red, he probably did just that. A couple of days later, I called Jack Kvance, the athletic director at George Washington. Kvance and I had been friends since his days as the basketball coach at Catholic University in the early 1980s. In fact, we were sitting in a bar together in Northeast Washington on the night of December 8, 1980, toasting Catholic's amazing triple overtime victory over St. Joseph's team that would reach the Elite Eight of the NCAA tournament the following March, when I noticed John Lennon's face on the TV screen behind the bar. A few seconds earlier, the Monday night football game had been on the same screen. Baffled, Jack and I walked up to the bar just in time to hear Howard Cosell report that John Lennon had been shot and killed outside his New York apartment that evening. Jack got out of coaching a few years later. He became the AD at George Mason, and then in 1994, got the job at George Washington. When I would go to GW games, it was impossible not to notice Red, the most famous GW grad of them all, class of 1940, sitting 10 rows up from the floor. "He never misses a game," Kvance told me one night when I asked how often Red came, a